One. Hello, guys. Welcome back to the Rugby Journey. We're here with a very, very special guest, mate. Introduce yourself, please, my friend.
My name is Sean Killian, and I'm the president of the Tasmanian Rugby Union.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Well, welcome to the show, my friend. Sean, as we all sort of know here on the Rugby Journey, we like to get a bit of a background on our guests. So, yeah, do you want to start off by telling you what your rugby journey was, sort of where you started, how you got involved, and to how you ended up becoming the president of Tasmanian Rugby?
Yeah, sure. I suppose mine started many years ago, playing rugby in South Africa when I was five. Grew up, I suppose, you know, in a place where rugby is pretty big and rugby is a lifestyle. So I grew up there, played a fair bit of rugby as a junior. Was lucky enough to go to a rugby nursery school in South Africa called Maritzburg College. And after school, finished up my rugby through school years and played a bit of club rugby and stuff in Durban at College Rovers, and then immigrated to Australia, moved to Sydney and went down and played my rugby down the Northern Beaches at the Rats, Warringah Rugby Club, and spent a few years playing down there. Through my teaching and PE teaching, I've gone into coaching through schools. Was a teacher at Mater Maria Catholic College and taught down there and coached down there, and just did a bit of representative Broken Bay and Combined Catholic College coaching down there, and then worked into Warringah, where I started coaching the Colts. Moved out to Bathurst, Stannies for a year and a half, and then made my way down here to beautiful Tassie, and with my wife and my kids, and we're down here. Love Tassie, got involved in rugby, started teaching, I suppose, down here and sort of coaching down here. And I think the big thing for me was trying to give everyone the opportunity that I had as a kid and enjoy the game as much as I do and I did growing up, and I still do, and having that passion. So, you know, just trying to get involved in rugby as much as I can down here and grow the game. Started a little rugby academy when I first came out because I found that there weren't enough kids, I suppose, been involved. So we only had rugby down here at that stage for under 14s upwards. So, okay. Yeah, Luke Burgess came down back to Tassie with his wife and his kids around about the same time, and Burge and I started doing a bit of work on the Rugby Union Academy. And we started that just doing a few holiday programs, then built that into doing some strength conditioning and some speed and agility stuff, working on techniques, and also just getting the little kids from 6 and 7 and 8 to 9 years old just to love the game and be involved. So sort of building on that, and then you know, things got a bit busy with work and life, and I started coaching a bit of the Tassie rep stuff. And then, you know, I finished up playing my days of rugby myself, and, you know, I just wanted to really try and make a difference in Tassie. So I put my hand up to be the president of Tassie Rugby Union, just because I think, you know, we've really got to try and do whatever we can to encourage kids and encourage people to be involved, and, you know, boys and girls, you know, from everywhere, just to get them involved in rugby and love it, you know, like I do.
Wow. Wow, crazy, mate. Well, yeah, mate, look, again, thank you for sharing your story. How have you found the, let's say, the marketing of rugby to maybe some guys down here in Tassie who it's maybe not their most preferred sport? Obviously, coming from South Africa and New South Wales, bit of nursery in rugby. Obviously, New South Wales, probably the biggest amount of Wallabies, Super Rugby players sort of in total, and obviously South Africa with what South Africa's been doing, and the nurseries, it's all around there. When you come to a place like Tassie, rugby sort of hasn't blossomed, let's say. You're now the president. What's the next course of action? What's next? How do you get people in schools or just the general public to go, hey, I want to go see Tassie rugby today. I want to go see, you know, the state team play. Or what would attract other states to come down and actually play games down here in Tassie?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think rugby's really inclusive as a game, and, you know, wherever you know, whatever size you are or shape you are or speed you are, there's a position for you, and I think that's one of those things that's really attractive for rugby. Down in Tassie, it is a hard slog. You know, soccer's massive down here. Basketball's growing, you know, massively as well down here. And then AFL, being an AFL state, it's really tough to try and compete against these other sports. But I think the thing that we look at is trying not to compete against them. I think it's working with them. You know, growing up as a kid, playing a lot of sport myself, and as a PE teacher, I think that it's important that we don't specialise. So just trying to give kids an opportunity and give people an opportunity to be able to play multiple sports and be able to transfer their skills and you know, they learn different things in different sports. You develop different connections with different people and you make different friendship groups, which is awesome for life. So I think that's probably one of the hardest things, you know, from a marketing point of view and getting it out there, is that it's not a sport that everyone plays down in Tassie, and it is quite tough. But I think the big thing for us is just, you know, saying to people, hey, listen, you know, come down, have a run, see what it's like to run with the ball in your hand, which is very different. You know, so there's a lot of youngsters that I have at school that really enjoy the contact side of things. So they play their footy and they don't get as much contact when they're, you know, playing their footy, but being able to play rugby and be able to actually run on the ball in their hand, be able to have the contact zone and be involved from that point of view, which is something that they really enjoy. For us, from a Tassie rugby point of view, we haven't had full-time staff for a long time down here, and that's the step that we've just introduced. We've worked really hard to build up some funds to be able to get, you know, someone to get around to the schools and try and develop rugby for the juniors. So I think that's the big thing for us, is junior development. I know Rugby Australia talk about community rugby and making sure that we can develop the grassroots. You know, we want to go out there and get into the schools, and we've got a holiday program coming up this holiday where we want people to, you know, get involved and be a part of rugby and experience it. And I think once you experience it, it's something that can take you anywhere in the world. I know I've been pretty fortunate to go a lot of places through rugby and meet a lot of people, and it's been great. So I encourage people to get involved.
Mate, took the words out of my mouth, mate. You're a pro at this, mate. I think you've done a couple of these before. You're not telling me. mate, that's awesome. And I guess the other thing for me is, look, rugby, as you said, it could take you anywhere, but the camaraderie you get from rugby, you know, like most of my mates, 98% of them, 99% of them, I've played rugby with before, or you've gone down that road, right? And you meet so many lifelong friends. I remember my first 15 coach, Seven Boys High, said, you know, the great thing about rugby is you'll play with 14 other blokes and maybe you pick 5 of them to be your best men. That's just how tight you become as rugby players. And obviously it's not just the players, right? It's the volunteers. It's everybody else that makes the whole show run for 80 minutes that everybody else doesn't see too. What are the next steps going forward for Tasmanian rugby? Obviously full-time staff and getting into the juniors, but where do you see Tassie rugby in 5-10 years?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's a hard thing to answer at the moment, because we've only just got our full-time staff member and we're starting to build. I think for us, we want to try and grow the game and grow the numbers. We're working really hard at growing the numbers, not just in the juniors, but trying to work in the seniors for the men's and the women's game as well. From a juniors point of view, we're trying to grow it from a boys and a girls point of view. So really trying to grow the numbers, I think, is key, particularly over the next 5 to 10 years. If you don't have numbers, you don't have a game, you know. So you've got to have players that want to play. Volunteers is always a big thing, you know, trying to get people out there that are prepared to give back and help out. And I think, you know, I had a youngster that I taught at school and played a fair bit of rugby, and I spoke to him about giving back and going out and coaching and actually seeing the enjoyments of getting involved with the kids and helping them out and seeing what they get out of it. And that's a big thing. I think there's probably not enough people that are prepared to come back and help out and give back, which, yep. I think, yeah, it's great to be on the sideline and watch, but, you know, running water or helping as a manager and that kind of stuff is really important as well for us as a community, and we need that community help as well. So I think just developing numbers is a big one for us over the next 5 to 10 years. From a Tassie, I suppose, representative point of view, we've put a number of different age groups in place that have been able to go on tours. We've, you know, we had 2 girls tours this year. We had 3 boys age groups go on tours this year for all under age rugby, which is awesome, and it's the most we've had in ages, which has been great. I mean, Tassie used to, I think it was about 10 or 15 years ago, They had, you know, like a 10-team competition in age groups, but things have started to fall away. And we started to build back with those numbers and get those players to come back and want to play representative rugby as well. So I think for us, you know, 5 to 10 years down the line, from a junior's point of view, is be competitive. You know, we have been competitive at different times, and I feel that we're slowly starting to bridge the gap. You know, and it might only be, I say only, like, no offense to everyone, but, you know, when I say we might only be bridging the gap with the smaller states, but we've got to start somewhere.
Yep.
And by bridging that gap slowly with, you know, South Australia and Northern Territory, it just means that we start to improve our level of rugby down here. And I said to some of the players when we came back from Southern States this last year, and I said, you know, one of the big things is we go over there and we play, and we see the gap between our juniors and the juniors we play against. Mm. And then the idea is that we've got to step up and we've got to lift our game and we've got to pick it up and improve our game when we're there to be competitive. But then when we come back to Tassie, we've got to keep that level so that we can pull those players around us up and try and improve our level of rugby. And I think the more we improve our level of rugby, the more we enjoy the game.
Yep.
And the more we enjoy the game, you know, the more we want to be a part of it and the more we encourage other people to come back and get involved. So, yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned as well about people giving back and, you know, it's very good that you pointed that out because, you know, from the outside looking in and, you know, I'm by no means in the inner sanctum of Australian rugby or New South Wales rugby or anything like that for that matter, but, you know, from the outside looking in, sure, the players sometimes will go out to rugby club if they're told to and whatever, or, you know, you'll get a few, like there's a few examples I've brought up on other podcasts, like, you know, Jack Dempsey would stay all throughout Colts, all throughout second and first grade and then play first grade, or if he wasn't playing Tars that week, he'd come watch Gordon at Chatswood Oval. There was one podcast I did earlier in the week with Tafu Pilotta now, and I was explaining to him how I was playing for Gordon at the time and Taff was playing for Parramatta and he played fourth grade, stayed all the way through the first grade, all the way through the women's game, and everyone from Gordon and from Parramatta was like, wow, Taffy Plod now, see, that's incredible, right?
You know? Yep, yep.
So how do you get someone to come back and more importantly, give back to Tassie Rugby? What do you say to those people?
Yeah, I mean, Taff's a prime example, mate. You know, when I lived in Sydney and you'd see him everywhere. And I think he's, you know, he's one of those people that just loves the game so much. For me, I think it's very much about understanding, you know, the need of volunteers, the need of community. So if you grow up in a game that you love and you're really passionate about it, you want to be around and you want to be out there and help out and do things. And I think that there's probably people that love rugby down here, which is great, but I don't think that they've been involved in rugby long enough to have grown that passion from a youngster. You know, when you're 5 years old and you're playing rugby and you play 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, by the time you're 15, it's something that you love and it's a part of your life. Yeah. Whereas if you only started when you're sort of 14 or 15, You've missed those younger years, and I think when you're younger, that's when you really start to, you know, think about what you want to do in life. And if you grow up playing other sports, and you're playing your cricket, and you're playing your footy, and you're playing your basketball, and playing your soccer, that becomes your passion, and that becomes what you know what your life revolves around. So for me, I just think it might be, you know, a long time from now that we're going to get those younger generation that are going to grow older and they're going to be just so in love with rugby throughout their entire life that they're going to come back and give. We do have a few people, you know, that do still have that passion, and a lot of them, you know, came from the mainland and they grew up playing the game. And there are a few people over here that grew up in Tassie that are just hooked on the game and they do come back and volunteer. But yeah, I just think it's about having that passion and growing that passion from a young age and making it a part of your life. And once it's a part of your life, you just don't ever want to let go. I mean, I know I played, you know, I'm 43 now, played my last game 2 years ago. On my 30th birthday, I remember sitting at Rat Park on my 30th birthday going, yeah, I think I'm done. you know, and still, you know, carried on putting the boots on and carried on putting the boots on, and I just couldn't let go. Just could not let go. Carried on coaching and helping out and doing what I could, but just could not stop getting back on that field, even though the body was struggling and the body, you know, the body couldn't take it. It was only 2 years ago that I played what I think is probably my final game until my 14-year-old gets a few years older and I can have a run with him. But, you know, and that's just because you just can't let go.
Yeah.
You just can't let go.
It's like it's like a drug, isn't it? It's crazy.
It is. It's addictive. It's completely addictive. And every time you get on that field, it reminds you why you were on that field and why you wanted to play and why you do what you do.
Yeah. And I guess, is that one of the things that has attracted you to rugby? Is obviously, when you say you can't let go, it's not just the rugby, right? It's not just the contact.
It's
everything that encompasses rugby. So is that something for you at 41, 40, whatever, you're going, you know what, I've missed the boys. I miss going out and having training sessions and putting it all out there and the teamwork and the camaraderie.
Yeah, definitely. It's very much a community game. And when you develop that, you know, when you build your mates, like you say, you know, you go to school, you have 15, 14 other players in your team, and you're probably going to find five of them are going to be your best man in your wedding. It's something that becomes part of your life. And when you have that for so long, and probably, you know, saying that's very similar to the addiction of a drug, it is very much, because when you have something for so long and all of a sudden you don't have it, you feel lost and you feel like you need it. And that's why you look at your professional players, how they struggle when they finish playing. And that's a prime example where they finish playing, they've got all these mates, they've got all these lifelong friends, all these people that they spend so much time with, and they spend their life with them, and then all of a sudden that's gone. And then they feel lost, and they're not sure, you know, they're not sure what to do next, and they're not sure where they go, and they got to make new friends, and it's quite difficult. So, it is very much, you know, when you've got those people around you, and you see them every day or three times a week, they're your mates you see on the weekends, they're your mates you do things with, they're the ones you go away with, and it's very much part of your life.
And I guess as a president, I mean, how do you deal with those players, you know, those players who are transitioning, maybe their whole life is rugby, they're on a canteen or they're running water bottles out, and there's just this, oh, wow, Saturday's come around, it's rugby, right? And then maybe you don't hear anything from them during the summer or whatever, and then they just pop up again in rugby. How do you manage that transition from playing to not playing but still wanting them to be part of the club?
I think it's just about contact. You know, like if we lose contact with people, it's a lonely place. It's a really lonely place. And doing things in the off season and being part of rugby, you know, even if it's just getting together and having a barbecue or going down to the beach, and you know, the rugby seasons go so long these days, where you generally start in I know from the mainland, you start your pre-season about end of November, and you only finish in September, so you don't have much break. You know, down in Tassie, it's not as long. You know, we probably start around December, January, your pre-season, so there's only a gap between September and December. But you know, I think in the community, it's about just keeping in contact with those people. And Tassie is a small place, and Hobart's a small place, Launceston's a small place. If you're up in Burnie or Devonport, they're all pretty small places, even though it's a city down here. You know, you see people around town. It's amazing how many people you bump into, and it's about keeping in contact and making sure that you don't let people just, I suppose, drift off. And if you don't see them that next year, then it's, you know, like, where you been? What's going on? Why haven't you been around?
Just keep in contact.
Yeah, keep in contact.
Wow, yeah, and I think that's really important, because, you know, I've known a lot of rugby players and great blokes in general who feel very lost when rugby's not around. You know, maybe they see their friends and they go out for beer and steak at the clubhouse or something, you know, every Tuesday and Thursday, and they can decompress, and, you know, there is this element of trust with rugby players, and whether it's the fact that we run up hills together or we smash each other or whatever it is, there's this level of trust where you can just, hey mate, look, I'm really struggling at the moment, I'm going through something, you know, what's your thoughts, whatever. Most of the time I just tell you get stuffed and then walk away and get a beer. But it's good to have that person to listen to because, you know, the thing is, as you said about rugby, it's for everyone. So naturally you attract different walks of life, right? You might have someone who doesn't have a family, who might be an old fella. You might have someone who does have a family. They're complaining about their lives to each other, but what they do have is the rugby club.
Yeah, it's very much a safe space.
Yeah.
And I think you talk about that element of trust. The element of trust, I believe, comes from the fact that you're on a field and it's a contact sport, it's a combat sport where you've got to physically get in the way of someone to stop them from getting past you. And the only way you can't defend everyone, you need your team to help you.
Yeah.
And you've got to trust each other to do their job. You trust everyone on that field to do their job, and everyone trusts you to do your job.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, you literally put your body on the line for the people around you because you're playing the game together.
Yep.
And you bust your backside and do whatever you have to do to make sure that, you know, you do the best that you can to, you know, to help them out. And I think that's where that trust comes from, where you work so hard together pre-season, you work so hard to get on the field, you have the trust in each other to be able to, you know, put your body in the line for those players and that, you know, stop that opposition. And it is physical work and it's hard work, and, you know, along the way you often get battered and bruised. And it's about building that with each other. And then when someone is going through a tough time and they're struggling, or, you know, they feel they need to talk, they know that you're there. They know you can have a chat. They know that they can rock up a training and they can moan and complain the entire training and no one's gonna complain about it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a safe space.
Yeah.
It's a place where you're happy for people to talk and people to, you know, blow the smoke off and blow the steam out and enjoy themselves. And for some people, it's a release. I know for me, you know, I'm a teacher, full-time teacher, got a family, got a 14-year-old, and I got an 18-month-old, and life's busy. My wife, you know, for me, she knows that rugby is my me time. Like, that's my mental health time. If I'm out coaching, or I'm out playing, or I'm out doing things, you know, and it's on the weekends or it's during the week and it's late at night and early in the morning, all that stuff, that's my me time. And, you know, I don't sit and watch movies or read books or go for walks and that kind of stuff. I coach.
Yeah.
And I get involved in sport, and that's what I do. And that's what absolutely makes me tick, and that's what relieves all my stress and all my strain and everything else that goes on in my life. That's the space that I need. That's my happy place.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, it's the same. They probably don't realize it, but when they get a bit older, they'll start to realize that when they go to rugby training or they go and coach and they go and do things, that makes them really happy, and that keeps them coming back, and they keep coming back because they're happy. And when they finally realize that that's their safe space and that's their happy space and that's what keeps them going, you know, that's when you know you've got a place that you can go to any time and you can speak to those people and you can confide in them if you've got any problems.
And that, obviously, you belong to, right? Like, it's something that, without doubt, you wear the same colours as me. We're sweet. We're a team.
Yeah.
We're
brothers. And even within rugby community, like, you might not wear the same colours, but you play the same game.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, you play the same game. You're part of the rugby community.
Yeah.
And anywhere you go in the world, you're part of that rugby community. We talk, you know, like, there's people that they always give stories about how they've gone around the world in business. They've gone around the world traveling, and the first thing they do is they find a rugby club.
That's crazy.
And that's it. And they're done.
Crazy. I mean, I remember I've told this story. It's not like a broken record now on all these podcasts, but I told a story about, and I'll never forget this, George Gregan came at a rugby dinner repping boys, and he said, you know, well, he actually, technically, he had like a 2-hour monologue I just wasn't paying attention to, but the one thing I did pay attention to was he said, look, rugby is one of those games. It's the only game in the world where you could take a pair of boots and a mouth guard and go everywhere, and there will always be a game.
Yep, that's
and that
it.
Is, and for me, that was so like, oh my God, like, if I'm 18, 19, 20, maybe I'm not part of the system, maybe I haven't made it, maybe whatever, even just, hey, go to Argentina and play footy, go to Spain, we saw Portugal and Georgia play, you know, like,
yep.
Namibia plays in the Rugby World Cup. We have all these countries.
And it also opens doors for you.
Absolutely.
You know, they find your jobs, you know, they find your accommodation,
yep.
It's almost very similar to an old boys, you know, being an old boy at a school.
Yeah.
There's a lot of old boys that are already connected around the world because they got old boys that are spread out all over the place, and you can go anywhere in the world as that old boy, and someone that might be 30 years older than you will, you know, let you stay at their place if they need to for a few days. It's the same in rugby. You go and find a rugby club, and you know, it opens doors for you and it gives you opportunities.
That's right, absolutely. Hear, hear, well said. Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, exactly right. I mean, you should pretty much take it. I think you should host this show, mate. look, I'm glad we touched on that. I would love for you to go in detail about the recruitment process here. And the reason I bring this up is obviously being from New South Wales and being part of the public school system. The game in New South Wales, I'm sure, as you know, is dominated through the private schools.
Yeah.
Right. And it seems, especially from us bit of public school people, that, you know, we're the leftovers, right? And they all, you know, you go to a Riverview Joeys game at Riverview or Joeys, it's packed out. You go to Leichhardt Oval, packed out. That everyone gravitated towards there. Even at times you go out west, maybe, you know, Granville Boys High is playing Kalara Boys High. No one's there. No one cares, right?
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean, when I was working New South Wales Rugby, I would ref these games and I'd go, Jesus, this is cracking. I can't believe I'm the only one seeing this game of footy. And then you'd go to Joey's and view it, and don't get me wrong, still great, great footy, but the atmosphere is different. And it's like, it's almost like I compare it to, like, you know, subby-grade footy to then going to watch a Shoot Shield game of footy.
Yep.
Like, you go to a random park, you see a random footy game, you go, wow, that was a cracking game, that was really cool. Then you go to Shoot Shield and the whole atmosphere is totally different. And I think, you know, I don't think enough people bring up the disparity between the private school and the public school.
Yep.
And I want to make very clear, I'm not blaming the actual school itself, because they're just trying to get their players.
Yeah, they're just doing the best they can for their school.
Absolutely. Yep, so it's not that. I believe the problem is that the selectors and of New South Wales Rugby or Australian Rugby or whoever it is are only looking at the six or eight schools or whatever it is, right? They're not really taking into account, hey, you know, you might get a guy from Randwick Boys High or from North Sydney Boys or from Blacktown or from, you know, Endeavour Sports or wherever, or even a school in Warringah or a school wherever that might have the great talent. So they say, well, if I'm not being noticed, I'm just going to go play rugby league. So how did, obviously in Tassie, it's very different. It's one private school, I believe.
Yeah, there's one private school that plays rugby down here.
Right, right. Yep. And then the rest, I would imagine, are all public state schools?
Well, the rest are generally clubs.
Really?
Yeah,
oh,
so
wow.
We've got a very different system down here because sport is not really pushed much in your state schools down here.
Okay.
There's no Saturday sports and no weekend sports and that kind of stuff. And it's just something that's really hard to push in the schools. And I think the big thing is that you need at least one super passionate person that's a teacher at that school that wants to drive it. Because there's a lot of time and effort goes into driving rugby or driving a sport. And, yeah, we've been lucky enough that we've had a few people come along the way that have got into schools and either been a teacher or maybe been a teacher's aide or something like that, and really tried to get into schools and try and push it a bit harder and try and encourage them to play. But schools is a really tough one, because unless you've got a teacher that's prepared to run the trainings and organize everything and communicate to all the parents and get everything done and really drive that and go around and you talk about recruitment, from a school point of view, there's about three of us as teachers that we go around and we speak to the kids and we're like, oh, why don't you play rugby? You know, like, oh, you look like you enjoy running the ball, and we get around and we don't purposely go out at lunchtime and find them.
Right.
But when we see them, I'm a PE teacher, I speak to boys along the during lesson time. It's like, oh, man, you look like you enjoy the physical side of things. Why don't you come and play? And we constantly tap people on the shoulder and try and, you know, see if they're interested. We've got three teachers at our school that really love their rugby. They push hard, they work hard at getting out there. there's a lot of communication needed with the boys. There's a lot of communication needed with the parents. There's a lot of organisation that goes into it. So we're fortunate because we've got three. But most places don't have any. So you need at least one to go out there and really push that in the school. So our school rugby out here is, you know, we've got Hutchins, who's the main school that plays a lot of rugby. Yep. St. Virgil's has come along, which is an all-boys school, systemic Catholic school that's down the road from Rugby Park. And, you know, there's a few age groups there that they got some teams in, which is awesome. Yep. And, you know, we've had one or two teachers that have come through as, you know, there was a teacher there a few years ago that's since left, and another teacher's there now that's pushing rugby, and they're starting to try and get rugby going. Don't have all the age groups and don't quite have rugby going yet, but it's slowly, you know, creeping in.
Sure.
And I think that's the hard thing, is trying to find someone that's able to get in there and tap people on the shoulder and encourage them and run things. Most of it's run through clubs, and we've got all our premier clubs down here try and push juniors and try and encourage juniors and get them involved. And on a Friday night, we've developed our junior rugby down here at Rugby Park, that on a Friday night, we've now gone from under 14s all the way down to under 8s. And we've had under 8s and under 10s running around, under 12s, under 14s, under 16s and under 18s. And not all those clubs have got all those age groups. And the ones that don't, we let them combine. Or if there's, you know, two in this team and two in that team and two in that team, we say, right, under 8s, giving you all bibs tonight, you're in red bib, you're in green bibs, and you play against each other and just try and get them involved. Yeah. So it's a tough task trying to recruit and trying to get kids involved. But I think there's a number of players that when they play the game and they realise, and this is not me taking anything away from any of the sports, because sure, I love my sports in general, and yeah, I played everything that I could as a kid. But when they realise that they can hold a ball in their hand and they can run, and other people are going to try and stop them, they really enjoy that. They really enjoy that part of the game where it's like, stop me if you can sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's that, you know.
And it's unusual.
It is, and it's, you know.
What other game can you do that?
But the first line break you make, and, you know, maybe even you just get put through a hole, like you're not even, didn't have to run through anyone.
Yep.
You're looking around going, shit, did I do that?
This is awesome.
Crazy. This is insane. And then you look at the sideline, your mum's cheering you, go, son, you know. It's like you get this immediate rush at like 12, 13, just like, whoa, this is like, and it's, your hard work gets paid off in rugby, right? Like you see it. And normally it's the team that just puts that little bit more effort in, comes out on top. Obviously, you know, unfortunately in the top level, referees and TMOs and all that sort of thing, they can sort of change and dictate a game a wee bit. You've got to sort of play to them a little bit. But more often than not, you know, especially if you go back and you look at some of the New Zealand South African games or the Australian New Zealand games, Australia South Africa, it's that 78th minute, 75th minute, 70th minute, whatever it is, someone just put a little bit more effort than the other one, whether it's someone.
Well, those 1%ers, isn't it? Talk about absolutely. The 1%ers on the field, and
absolutely,
and it's that little bit more effort, or, you know, not lying on the ground. When I grew up as a kid, from a really young age, I was told, if you lie on the ground, you're out of the game.
Yeah,
and you are, because if you're on the ground, you've got to, you know, place, pop, release, whatever, you're out of the game. Yep. So as long as you're off your feet, you can't do anything.
That's right.
So, you know, little things like that, the 1%ers of when you hit the deck, you're up and you're back in the line or you're back in position, those small little things make such a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how can you, I guess for me, you know, I love to use rugby as an example for everyday life, right? So like we were talking about earlier, you know, the guy that kind of comes in and he goes, oh, you know, I've fucked up, I've done something wrong, right? You see them all the time. Maybe they've passed the ball out or something, head goes down immediately. What's the first thing that happens in rugby? Hey, butt tap. Hey, it's all right, bro. Yep. Don't worry about it. We'll get them next time. Just, you know, next time, just a little bit earlier. We got this, right? Like there's always that someone to get you up. And, you know, same thing. You know, you're down 4 minutes. You're down 4 points, minute to go. And, you know, your skipper or someone who isn't even the skipper just says, hey, boys, we're going to march down this field. We're going to score. We're going to win. It's going to be awesome. And then you go do it. And you just go, whoa. And 20 years from now, you go, hey, remember that speech you made behind the goal line at this place? You know exactly where it happened, what time it was, what the score was, what you did. Well, maybe not what you did after. You might be foggy a couple of hours in, I think.
But I think that comes back to the values of rugby. And you know, you got your respect and your integrity and your discipline and that kind of stuff. And that's all part of the values of rugby. And even though you don't go out and teach those values as values and say, this is what discipline looks like, this is what respect looks like, you don't go out and teach each and every one, but they're part of what you learn when you play the game. You know, little things like on the field, the discipline that you have to have, the way that you speak to players, the way that you speak to the referee, you know, all those sorts of things are very different to some other sports. And you can see when you're on the field, and that's some of the stuff that, that parents say, what they love about trainings and they love about bringing their kids to rugby is that they're learning about these values and they are instilled into them. And they, you know, they're out there on the field doing them. They take those into life as well. And they're so important because they mold us and they shape us as people. And, you know, you don't forget those values. You don't forget those things that happen. I mean, you look at, I suppose, a prime example. There's the picture of Sonny Bill Williams and Jesse Creel at the end of the World Cup semi-final when New Zealand beat the Springboks and knocked him out. And, you know, Sonny Bill went up to him and was, you know, confining him and having a chat with him and, you know, really just, I get goosebumps when I think about it. But, you know, that's part of the values of rugby and not just going off and going crazy and not worrying about the opposition. You actually care about people and absolutely, it's because they play the game and they're involved in the same game you are and they have the same values that you do and it's part of life.
Yeah, and rugby in a weird way, it's almost kind of like, you know, we've been raised the same. It's got that really weird, you know, like you have that guy from around the way and maybe he's on your same street and you go, you know what, you know, we grew up together, we ate shit together, we did whatever. You have that sort of connection, right? Maybe you're in someone's team or, as you said, maybe the fact that you've just played rugby and I've played against you 10, 15 times, whatever, you go, okay, I know that push comes to shove, he's got certain skills, he's got certain traits, he's a good fella, he plays rugby. I can't tell you how many times someone I've said, oh, I play rugby and the whole conversation will change. You'll be in an interview. Oh, really? What rugby club did you play? Oh, right. I used to play rugby back in blah, 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 blah. And you're just now having a totally different conversation. Yeah. All because you now belong to the rugby brotherhood.
Yep.
Right? And that's from when I'm talking to people and they say, hey, why do you like rugby? Why don't you like rugby league? And I say, I love rugby league. Rugby league's great. It's great fun to watch. I mean, it's very simplistic and, you know, it's very easy to pick up. And a lot of people would say, well, rugby league is a lot easier to watch than rugby union. It absolutely can be. You know, if you're,
it's a simpler game.
Especially as a South African. I mean, you would obviously know that, you know, when the Cheetahs played the Lions or something like that, it'd be like 15 high bombs in the first 35 seconds and, you know, you'd just be kicking and everyone's sitting here going, geez, am I watching tennis or rugby? What's going on here? But then you watch a game and it's, you know, down to the wire or it's Ireland, New Zealand and, you know, you're just like, whoa, what? And the whole place, you know, Ireland lost that quarterfinal. And the entire Irish fans were still in the crowd singing Zombie.
Yeah.
Right? Just be like, look at where we are. This is amazing that we're even just here in this scenario, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I think that a lot of people don't get those values introduced to them. And maybe the parents, this is where I'm sort of leading into this. How can you sort of teach the parents the values of rugby, especially parents that haven't played rugby before or don't really know what it is? I'm especially talking about the mums of the daughters that play rugby. They go, oh, it's physical. You don't want to play that. You might get hurt, might get injured. How do you win them over, especially as a president of a rugby club? How do you sort of get that, you know what, seems like a good spot, we'll put them in?
It's a tough one, and in all due respect, I think mums are a hard, that they're hard to win over, because it's their little baby, and they don't want them to, you know, get hurt and that kind of stuff, and it's an interesting conversation that you have with parents around rugby, but I think bringing them along and saying, come and see what we do, come and watch, you know, come and watch a game. I had a youngster that wanted to play and was a bit unsure. I said, come and watch. Doesn't cost anything other than your time.
Yep.
Come and have a look and see what we do. Decide for yourself. And then if you want to get involved, come in, get in part, you know, be part of our training, but do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Don't get involved in the tackling if you don't want to. Don't get involved in the breakdown if you don't want to. Come and see what it's like. Hang around, be a shadow. You know, we'll involve you as much as we can and let the parents come and look and see what it's all about. And I think once parents see it for themselves and see what it's all about and see what they get out of it, that's a real big game changer.
Yeah.
And the other big one is word of mouth. You know, you get a parent that, you know, brings their kid along to rugby, girl or boy, they come along, they play, they enjoy themselves, they have a great time, they learn some new value, or not learn new values, but they learn about the values of rugby, and they see how things are done. And I've had so many parents say to me, oh, wow, my son come and play rugby and he loves it. And, you know, it's so good for him. And, you know, he comes home and you know, he seems like a different person, and it's great, you know. So I think it's about experiencing. If you come and experience it, you don't have to be thrown in the deep end. You can experience it to whatever extent you want.
Right.
And whether it's just watching or whether it's getting involved a little bit or getting involved more.
Yeah.
And I think it's about just experience and even if it's just tipping your, you know, putting your toe in the water and seeing how you go first.
And that's great advice for young coaches and young administrators, well, all around the world, really, not just in the, you know. One of the great things about this podcast in particular, I don't want to blow my own horn here, toot toot, of course, you know, this reaches out to all different parts of the world, right? So maybe through this conversation, someone can go, oh, wow, okay, I've been struggling trying to win over these parents. I don't know what to say. I can't explain to them rugby because, I mean, no one can explain rugby when you think about it, but how do I get them to experience, hey, just come along for 5 minutes, see what it's like. Maybe come along to a Saturday game and see how, you know, Jill, the canteen lady, runs out with oranges and everyone's like, oh, thank you, Jill. And everyone gets around it and she's treated like a queen and, you know, everyone's gentleman. And, you know, I was told at a really young age, you know, league or soccer, depending on who you talk to, of course, is a gentleman game played by mongrels, right? And rugby is a mongrel game played by gentlemen, right? So, and it's that's so true. Like, you, all you have to do is look on the news and see all these league players going off and about and doing whatever. And occasionally a rugby player will come on, but it's very rare. And normally a lot of the time it's because he's put himself in a wrong situation or herself in a wrong situation. But what I really want to talk about with Tassie Rugby, and obviously we'll talk a little bit about recruiting and a little bit about advertising, but I think that the key members of Australian rugby, the players, the coaches, the gold medalists and sevens, all these people should be really, whenever they can, really, get the opportunity to go and travel to country towns, to Tassie, to Adelaide, to Perth, to Northern Territory, to all these different places. Because once you go past the border of Queensland, New South Wales and Melbourne, or Victoria, sorry, it's a completely different world out here, right? And some for the better, some of them, they just go, well, if you're not a rugby fan, it's kind of hard for me to talk to you. I can't do that. Obviously, you need the personal skills to go with it. But I think if you were to send, say, Michael Hooper to a school, their kids would just lose their absolute mind.
Yeah, and we've had the gold-blooded tour come down here when it comes to World Cups and that kind of stuff. And unfortunately, it doesn't happen often enough, you know. Yeah. But when we do, it's not just the kids, but there's adults down here that lose their minds. You know, there's when,
sure,
you know, we were fortunate. We had our 90th year this last year, 2023. We had our 90th year celebration. And we're fortunate enough that Rugby Australia sent down, you know, two current Wallabies down, and they came to our dinner and they came and did a, you know, a Friday night session here.
Wow.
The kids lost their minds. They couldn't contain themselves. We had parents that couldn't contain themselves. You know, they wanted photos and they just loved chatting to them and being around them. And I actually spoke to Daniel Herbert a few weeks ago when he just took over as the chairman of Rugby Australia. Yep. And he gave me a buzz and had a chat about a few things. And I said to him, you know, for me, I feel that we probably don't get enough, you know, enough players down here and enough people down here to try and grow the game. I feel that to a certain extent we left to grow the game on our own. in the way that, yes, you know, we do get some funding from Rugby Australia and we do get some assistance, you know, to help us with rugby, but kids want to see players. We don't have players down here. Kids want to see people that are involved in the game, and they love it. They absolutely love it. If we can get more players down here, get more even Super Rugby players down here, get a game down here every now and again. Like we had a Melbourne Storm and Canterbury Bulldogs game down here. I think it was about 7 years ago when I first arrived, yeah. And I was down at North Hobart Oval. And it was awesome. It was huge. We had so many people down there, and that's rugby league. I mean,
yeah.
We don't really have rugby league down here, but people, it was the closest thing to rugby union, and everyone was there.
Yeah.
And if we could get more players down here or get a game down here every now and again, you know, and try and grow the game, we don't, our kids and our, you know, people that are rugby community orientated don't see those players. They got to travel to Melbourne or travel to Sydney, yep. And it's a big ask. And I mean, we've got kids down here. We've taken a few kids away on state tours that have never been on a plane before.
Yeah.
And it's a big thing for them. So for them to be able to see those players and have that is amazing for them, and our community love it, and I think that would be awesome, you know, if we could get more people into the smaller communities and more people into the country, you know, country towns and down into South Australia and, you know, Northern Territory and that kind of stuff. I think it does a lot for the game and really, really grows the game. It's a big thing for these kids and even for the adults.
Yeah.
And I think it goes a long, long way.
Yeah.
You know, so as I said to Dan, I said, you know, just being honest about it is I feel that at times they've sort of ticked the box. You know, they've got someone come down and do a bit of a look around and run a session and do talent identification, but then we don't hear back from them for the next maybe 2 years or 3 years.
Yeah.
In the 8 years that I've been down here, we've had people come down 3 times in terms of doing talents ID. And yeah, fair enough, you know, we had COVID and money's been tight and that kind of stuff, but you've got to get around and see what's out there. You know, we've got a lot of players that want to go to the mainland, that want to go and test themselves, that want to go and play rugby. Absolutely. They've been up to, you know, Southern Districts, we've been up to Randwick, been up to one playing in with the Owls in Canberra, some up at Warringah. There's a few places around, you know, around Australia trying to play some Premier Rugby. And yeah, they might be playing second grade, third grade, whatever it is, but they love their rugby and they want to get up there and have a crack. And we do have some talented players down here, but they are falling by the wayside,
yep.
Because they're not really, they don't really know that there's a pathway.
Yeah.
They don't really see things happening for them, and they almost feel like, oh, well, there isn't really an opportunity. You know, I mean, how do we pick up some of our sevens players? We pick them up from you know, from everywhere. Mm. And if you want to develop players, you've got to put time into them, and you've got to put money into them. You know, that's the way it works. And unfortunately, you know, at Tassie Rugby, we're working really hard to try and grow the game. We're quite limited to what we can do on our own. You know, as I said, we've got our first full-time employee for years, and the rest has been on volunteers, and volunteers trying to work their backsides off. I teach full-time, but most of us work full-time,
yep.
And we try and do this all,
yep.
All you know, grow the game. And Tassie's not a huge place, but it's not a small place.
Exactly.
And to try and travel around and get people in the community isn't that easy. So it'd be great to grow the game more and get more people down here and try and encourage them to play and let them get a bit starstruck.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and so. You know, like, and for keeping all things fair, I mean, you know, I'm, you know, going without, you know, a week or two of work to come down to what I'm considered doing my part as well to help grow the game, you know, to get the word out there.
Yeah, and we really appreciate that. It's awesome. It's awesome to be able to talk about it
again. But again, like, if Australia, and this is half the problem. I mean, like, Australian rugby fans can see through the bullshit. Right, okay, and they'll say, "Oh, look, money's tight," and then they go spend 1.5 on Joseph Suaalii, and you go, "Oh, there's money. Then you go, oh, money's tight, but Cadbury's signed and they've given everyone the image. It's just like, okay, well, look, you can lie to us all you want, but it comes down, the reason we don't win the Bledisloe Cup, reason we don't win World Cups is because you guys are running it the way you want over here and everybody else is kind of just fending for themselves. If you're not New South Wales or Queensland and a little bit of Brumbies because they're more successful than everybody, then you're sort of just not in the bubble. And that's, look, this is just my opinion, of course. I like to think that that's, you know, fairly common sense. And great example, you know, let's look at the National Rugby Championships, as they call it. Now, we had one Western Force team. We had four New South Wales teams, four Queensland teams, one Canberra team. Where's South Australia? Where's Northern Territory? Where's Tasmania? All these teams. Okay, maybe at a professional level they can't do that, but you could do a similar thing what rugby league do with the New South Wales Cup and have, you know what? We're going to have a Div 2 sort of team and we're going to have the Country Eagle Bees play Tassie A's or, you know, like they do in the national state competitions everywhere. But it comes down to a lack of effort. And I think that's what really pisses a lot of people off. And then you go and you look at rugby league and you see, wow, like, you know, they just go above and beyond for their players. Hey, look, you're in the system. You're going to get looked at. And the most important thing, if you're good enough, you will be picked.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I grew up in South Africa and things were a bit different there. We had all our schools, whether you're at a state school, probably a state school or a private school or a, you know, systemic Catholic school, whatever school you're at, your top, you know, your sort of top 10 schools played against each other. Yeah. And there wasn't a CHS system and a CAS system and an ISC system and a this and a that and ISA system and a triple C system and all these systems in place based on your type of school.
Yeah.
And a GPS system. You know, we never had that. We had your top schools in your province or state, same thing, playing against each other.
Yep.
And they played against each other year in and year out.
Yep.
And, you know, some schools dominated for a few years and then other schools developed and got better and then other schools dominated and it's grown. And, you know, you then go and play. When I was playing, we never played many teams around the country. We'd have to go to tournaments or we'd have to go to festivals. We did, Marisburg College did a triangular every year, which was an amazing experience where we would leave on a Friday night and say this year we would go on a train and we would take our rugby team, our hockey team, our squash team, our golf team, our tennis team, our soccer team, all our winter sports, and we'll get on a train and we'll go all the way up to Grey College in Bloemfontein. And most people that know anything about South African rugby, they know that Grey Bloem is undoubtedly the best rugby school that we've had for years and years and years, produced the most Springboks ever. And we would go on a Friday on a train, arrive there on a Saturday morning. We would all get out of the train. Everyone would be billeted out for breakfast at a family.
Yep.
And we'll go out, have breakfast, go and check their house out and sit down and have a shower and that kind of stuff. Come in. Everyone spends the whole day at the school, watches all the games, gets through all the games. At the end of it, get back on the train, get back to our home city in the morning, yep, and get off the train. And then, you know, that's your spend the rest of your Sunday and do whatever you want to do. And that was happening. We would go up to Grey College and Afrikaans Hoërisien School, which is called Uffies, right outside Loftus-Versfeld.
Yep.
We're also one of the top rugby schools up there. They would come down to us. And the following year, we would go up to Uffies and Grey College would come down to us. And we would do this I suppose, this sort of three-way system, and it worked really well. Now, we still do that partly, but we also now just sort of, you know, fly around for different games around the country and play in a few different tournaments and festivals, and you now have your top schools playing against your top schools. Something like that I'd love to see, you know, in Australia. I think we have too many of the systems and try and play within the systems and watch the, you know, these players from certain schools, because of what school they go to, depends on, you know, what schools they play against. Whereas if you've got, you know, your best state schools and your best private schools and your best Catholic schools and all your best schools just playing against each other, you know, 10 games in a season, And then you can go and test yourself out. You know, if you say you're New South Wales, you play those schools against each other. And then you go and test yourself out and you go and play two schools in Queensland, two schools in Western Australia, maybe two schools in Victoria, two in Canberra. You've got a 15 or 17 game season. And you're playing the best schools in the country. Whereas I don't think that we have that in Australia. You know, we don't really see the best schools in the country playing against each other unless they're in the same school system.
And I mean, and I think that's really one of the things that that's keeping Australia down in terms of their. And again, how can you identify talent when you're looking at one system? Like if you're just by basic math, right? If you have, if you say six schools, you pick, you know, best 15 players out of these six schools, and you ignore the other 500 schools around the country, then how can you then put out a schoolboys team that's then going to beat a quality side? And we saw it at the World Cup this year. Aussies and Stephen Hoyles got right on Stan Sport, and you know, fair play to him. Called it out, called the bullshit when he saw it, and he said it looks like a bunch of 20-year-olds playing grown men. That's what it was.
Yeah, you know? I think when you know, it's you play better rugby in a better team. There's no doubt.
Sure.
You know, when you got better players around you, you play better rugby. When you got better training, you play better together. But there's always going to be these rough diamonds that just need to be polished up that are in schools that you're not going to see, and they just get lost. They get lost in the system. Because you don't get to see them play. And yeah, you know, you might find some of your teams and some of your games that you play, if you played some state schools against some private schools and that kind of stuff, it might be a 50 or 60-5 game. But you're gonna spot one or two players, you're gonna go, geez, they can play.
He's pretty handy.
They're on the losing team, but man, they got some talent. You put them in another team. You know, all of a sudden it's a different game.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's how you should be able to be out there. I mean, I think it was called the Waratah Shield when I was in Sydney.
Yep.
And you had teams that were coming from, you know, all different schools. And that was a good opportunity for schools to have a crack against some of the bigger rugby schools.
Yeah.
And it was a knockout system.
Yep.
You got one opportunity, you know, to play your game. If you lost it, you were gone. If you didn't, you went through the next stage. And that was really good. I mean, I remember down at Mardin Maria, and we played against Barker the 1 year. We got absolutely punished. It was 80-something to 7 or whatever. You know, but it was a good opportunity for our youngsters to have a crack. We had Boyd Kenilworth came out of Mardin Maria, and James Dogville came out of Mardin Maria.
Wow.
And they got an opportunity to play against some of these bigger schools.
Yep.
We had some good players. Luke Vesco played Australian. He landed up going to St. Augustine's in year 11. Yeah. And he played Aussie schoolboys. He played the Australian rugby league. Then he went to Manly and went to Parramatta and that kind of stuff. But, you know, there's some talented players down there in these smaller schools. They just need opportunity.
Yeah.
They just need to be seen. They just need to be able to, you know, have a run and have a game. And I think being able to play against some of those other schools is a great opportunity for them to be seen and,
absolutely,
you know, and just show what they can do.
And you look at, and, you know, I grew up with Andrew Kellaway. We went to primary school together, relatively the same age. And Big Andy, I'll never forget, I walked in one day. I was 9 years old and they've put this paper on my table. And I was like, well, firstly, I don't read the paper. It's a bit odd. But secondly, I was like, it's Andrew Kellaway on the front. And I said, mate, who did you pay to get this? What's going on here? And it said, oh, the next Wallaby.
Next big thing.
Next big thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, righto, mate. Everyone just relax. You're 10 years old, mate, you know. And we had a bit of a laugh, did all that. And then, of course, you see him go to Scots and he plays his under-20s and is the leading try scorer in the under-20s competition. And schoolboys, I think he made like 3 or 4 schoolboys in a year. It was crazy. And then, you know, he got his contract at Tars and he was falling by the wayside. And he's the prodigy kid of Australian rugby. And he's just kind of just fading into mediocrity. And at the time, Tars had Adam Ashley-Cooper, Curtly Beale, Israel Folau. They didn't really have space for Kells, right? So what did Kells do? He realised that he was falling by the wayside, probably wasn't going to get picked. So he said, look at this, I'm going to go overseas. learnt how to play in the UK. The UK said, hey, mate, you're great. You mean you've got some great skills, but you need to just, you know, look at this sort of thing. Then he went to the ICM Cup in New Zealand, and then they said, hey, mate,
yeah, like, your like great, needs great to... nursery. Oh, well, it's unbelievable.
Absolutely insane. And a lot of these players are doing that now. And I've always had the idea, you know, if you're going to maybe those fringe players, when Shoot Shield season's over, send them to the ITM Cup. Yep. I mean, you're playing against former All Blacks, current All Blacks. Just if you put people in a situation where they're playing good competition every week, it's going to make them better, right? And there's obviously a little bit of bias between Australia. Maybe want to create their own competition. That's just as good. Fair play. I understand that totally. But at the moment, that's where the talent is. I mean, the talent's at ML, look at the MLR. I mean, you got guys like Billy Meeks, who's a Norse boy, who's a Manly boy as well. He's gone over, and he's, I think, two times he's been back of the year. Jackson Jordan Hope is over there too. I used to work with him at Nike. He plays for the Beasties, and he's a good fella. He's carving up over there. All these players are getting opportunities elsewhere. And because they're getting it elsewhere, and we have the ghetto law, and there's three people or whatever we could pick, we're discounting a whole bunch of talent over here so we can build the nursery over here. But the problem is the nursery, again, this is from the outside looking in, and maybe this will change. Maybe this will change now that we have Roth, War, and Herbert there as well. And I'm hoping it is, because we have the rugby players running essentially around.
Yeah, they've
the
been there. They've been there. Yeah, they've got it. The experience. Yeah, yeah, correct.
And they understand that the Wallabies, when they were playing, were at the top. And they realise, this is what we need to do as administration, as players, as people who represent the game. This is the people we're looking for. So I think it's going to be nothing but absolute great times coming ahead. Mate, what's your opinion about the whole coaching fiasco that's happened with the Wallabies over the past year?
I'm got to be careful what I say, sure, always. Sure. But yeah,
I'm not,
I mean,
to tie
no,
to
no,
say
you're right. Throw me under the bus, yeah. No, that's all right. No, mate. I think, you know, looking at what was going on at the time, there was obviously a bit of unhappiness with where the Wallabies were.
Yep.
You know, the decision was made that they felt, my understanding is that they felt that, you know, we needed a bit of a shake up. They thought Eddie was the person to, you know, to be able to make those changes nice and quick and get things ready. You know, and then Eddie's now gone, and we're looking for a new coach. You know, I suppose the thing is, you sometimes in life you got to take risks.
Yeah.
You know, that risk didn't pay off, and it clearly didn't pay off.
Yeah.
Should we have just kept our coach that we had, and gave him the opportunity and said, listen, you know, a few months out, you know, we're not quite where we want to be, but we're not going to be able to make changes for the World Cup. Yes, I reckon we probably should have. Probably should have said, you know, it's a bit late now. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say, right, we're almost there. Let's see how we go. I think to a certain extent we were there and thereabouts. Like we weren't winning a lot of games.
Yep.
The Wallabies weren't winning a lot of games, but they were almost, there were a lot of tight games, and you could see where things were happening and where they were coming good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, I know as a supporter of any game, to watch a close game of rugby where you lose or win, and I hate losing, let's be honest, I hate it with a passion.
Yeah, you have to.
But whether you win or lose and it's a 2-point game, that is more entertaining to me than watching a 50-0 thumping by one of the teams.
For sure.
People say, oh, they want to see tries and they want to see action. If you understand rugby and you appreciate rugby, you understand quality rugby.
Absolutely.
And if it's a tight game and there's not much in it, that's what you want to see.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, it's not great from a marketing point of view if you're on the losing end and you're not winning games. But I do think from a coaching point of view, you know, I think we've got to find the right person. We've got to trust them. Trust them to do their job. Mm. If we pick the person, if we work hard, get our research done, we find a person and we go, right, we trust you to do it. We trust you. This is what we want you to do. We're all aligned in the same values and the same system. We give that coach the best opportunity by giving them the structures behind them.
Yeah.
If we can put the right structures in place.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that's a short-term structure of maybe 4 years for the next World Cup.
Yeah.
But we've got to put the structures in place that go for the next 20, 30, 40 years. And we've got to start at the bottom.
Exactly.
Right at the bottom.
And the thing that I found very interesting, as it went, when Eddie Jones got sacked, I thought, I do a bit of research in here. And I think I calculated since the 2003 World Cup, we've had about 8 or 9 coaches, right, that have come through the ranks. Obviously, the Checkers, the Ewan McKenzie's, Eddie Jones, Dave Rennie's, etc., Robbie Deans. New Zealanders have had 3. So they've had Steve Hansen, who ended up coaching coaching to 2007. And then Graham Hendry coached to 2011. And then Steve Hansen jumped in 2015, and then obviously 2019, and then Fozzie took over, and then obviously they've got Scott Robinson now. But you look at that whole thing as an All Black cohort, let's call them. You have one coach who you know is going to play the exact same way, you know, for 8 years or so. This is how he's going to play. The players are going to pick. Everything is okay. This is our brand of footy. This is our brand of footy. This is how we're going to play. I need to be fitter. I need to be stronger, whatever. It must be very hard as professional athletes to, when you're in a situation like that, to go, Dave Rennie wants me to play a little bit more open, a little bit more instinctive. Eddie Jones, he wants me to play a little bit more rigid and a little bit, you know, stay on your wing. Don't go looking for the ball. Oh, okay. And then maybe you get your club coach to, you know, maybe if it's your Marky Mark, for example, maybe Darren Coleman's like, mate, just do you. Play fullback, play 10, I don't care, just get the ball as much as you can. Maybe at the top level they're saying, hey, look, you know, you need to just, you're a winger, mate, stay on the wing. So it must be very difficult for that. But if speaking as a president and obviously as a coach, how do you then talk to your players about that? How do you communicate that? Say you've sacked a coach and there's a new coach coming in or there's uncertainty. What are the first things that you... So what is the first point of communication you have to the players?
Yeah, I think you've got to build the trust in those players in the first place. You know, you've got to have the trust and they've got to trust you. And I think that's, you know, that's an issue in sports. If you don't trust, and we all know as players, and you're playing under a coach that you don't believe in, you're gone.
Yeah.
You know, if the team doesn't believe in the coach, you'll go nowhere.
Yeah.
Whereas if the team believes in that coach, they live for that coach, they trust that coach, they know that whatever that coach says from a sport, like, you know, within reason, but from a game plan, tactic, whatever they say, you do, and you trust that they're making those decisions and they're making the right decisions, then you'll get them done.
Absolutely.
So I think you've got to have the trust of the players. So as a president, as a CEO or whatever it is, talking to those professionals that have had this inconsistency, and it's so difficult when you've got inconsistency, you know, you've got to speak to them and say, right, guys, listen, we're planning ahead. We're planning towards the next World Cup. We're looking 4 years ahead. And the idea is that we want to put structures in place. It's not gonna happen overnight. It's not gonna happen, you know, potentially in the next 6 to 8 months. It's gonna take a little while for us to organize ourselves and get things going. And I think the public and the people that are watching the game need to understand that as well.
Yeah.
You know, you don't just make changes and you know, you're not a wizard or a magician. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
So to build these structures and build these teams up and get them ready. And yeah, the World Cup's not the be-all and end-all, but you've got to have a start and a finishing goal. And you've got to have a goal and you've got to say, you know, we're going to do this and this and this. And part of that goal is to build and to get towards the World Cup.
Yeah.
But you're also, it's potentially a four-step process. It's by the end of year one, we want to have done this. By the end of year two, we want to have done this, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's really important that you put those structures in place. You let people know that this is our goal, this is what we want to reach, this is where we want to go. As players, they need to have that trust in you know, I suppose it's Rugby Australia. So I don't know. I haven't spoken to the players, but you know, whether they have or they haven't got that trust in Rugby Australia at the moment, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But Rugby Australia have got to build that trust.
Yeah.
If they don't have it.
And do you think that having those ex-players in there gives the players that sense of trust?
I think so, yes. I think by having players that have been there and been around and been involved in those situations, and they would have all been through that at some stage.
Yeah.
I definitely think that is a good thing, to have those ex-players there. You know, there's times where, you know, ex-players... sometimes as players they were great, but then as coaches or as working within rugby, they're not very good.
Yep.
And then sometimes you got players that were very ordinary, but they know how to coach, or they know how to manage, or they know how to run things.
Yep.
And then you get the best of both worlds, where you got players that were outstanding players and they can do, you know, all of the other stuff as well.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping, you know, we got no doubt that, you know, all three of them were outstanding players. They've seen a lot of rugby, they've been involved in a lot of rugby, and hopefully that they can prove that, you know, the administration side of things as well. They can build that trust. If they don't, I mean, I feel that they need to earn that trust to a certain extent, and they need to build that trust.
Right.
They might already have it from the players, but from an outsider looking in, I would say possibly they don't, because they've got to find their feet first and work their way in and say, right, guys, you know, build the relationship and go down that road, and then build that trust with the players, with the coaching staff, with the community, with rugby in Australia, and get things moving slowly, and then it'll start to take off. You know, things, you know, good things take time. We understand that. There's a lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of effort that needs to be put into that, you know, that process. And as I was saying, I think we've still got to make sure that we're building those structures and that infrastructure to be able to keep that going. You know, we can't just keep throwing our money at players at the top level. We've got to make sure that we're putting those structures in place all the way down, and we've got to get involved and help that grassroots and that community rugby stuff.
Yep.
You know, from a member state member point of view, Tassie Rugby, we rely so heavily on volunteers. We're almost 100% volunteer based.
Yeah.
As I said, we've only just got a full-time staff member, but to grow rugby, it's bloody difficult when you don't have staff. And to have staff, you need money. That's the way it works. Yeah. So, and to have money, you've got to have a product that is able to make money. So it's, you know, it's a catch 22. But yeah, you know, we're all trying to grow rugby around the country. I think we all need to work together. We need to make sure that there's no us versus them and them versus us. We all need to take this journey together and say, right, what do you say you're going to do? What do we say we're going to do? Let's work this, you know. How can we help each other? How can we help you, and how can you help us, and how can we help each other? And let's get this done together.
That's right.
And let's grow it.
Yep, absolutely. I absolutely agree. One last question before we wrap up, mate. And, mate, absolutely enjoy this conversation. Thank you for jumping on the podcast once again. On these podcasts, I really like to, if we can, go into a bit of depth of maybe the pathway of a player. Obviously, there's different pathways and stuff like that. You're a coach at a very prestigious school down here, and obviously the president of Tassie Rugby. Maybe the experience is probably a bit different in other states, just due to the scale of it. But if you were to have a conversation with a coach and you said, you know, there might be a pathway to become president of your state or your club team or whatever. How would you explore that with them?
How would I have that conversation with them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, I suppose it's just talking about the fact that there's opportunities in rugby. You know, you want people to be involved in the community. You want people to be involved in the game. And I think, like I said to that youngster that was at my school that started coaching,
yep.
And I said to him, when you actually give back to the community and you see, one, the difference it makes, number two, the difference it makes to the community, but the difference it makes to those kids or those players, and you see what they get out of it, you know, when they see what they get out of it and the joy that it brings you to see them run around and have fun and you know, win, lose, or draw, grow the game and learn the game and build that passion for the game, it's amazing. And like I said, that's my me time. That's my mental health time from personally. And I think a number of people find that that's the same. So from a coaching point of view, there are a lot of opportunities out there for coaches.
Sure.
There's opportunities to coach, you know, little kids in under eights. There's opportunities to referee. You know, refereeing is a massive thing that we always struggle with.
Yep.
We always need referees. There's opportunities to coach, go up the system, you know, and then at the end of the day, you can go anywhere in the world. Like we said, you can go anywhere in the world as a player.
Yep.
You can go anywhere in the world as a coach. And people do.
And as a referee.
You know, as long as they play in the game, you can travel. You can, you know, you can get a job. And rugby will open doors for you.
Yep.
So, you know, and if it means that we get more coaches down here for maybe not the next 20 years, but if we get one coach down here for the next 5 years while they build themselves up and work through the system and get things going, you know, that's almost like a 5-year apprenticeship that they work hard, they learn. We're happy to help. You know, from a Tassie rugby point of view, we're happy to help. We run courses. We want people to be involved. You know, if people are keen to get involved and do things, we'll help them. We've got two coaches. We've been lucky enough. Canterbury have given us there's a conference up at Nudgee next week.
Oh, yep. Okay.
And we've got two coaches that we've got two free tickets to go up there and be a part of that conference.
Wow.
Canterbury, we've just signed a deal with Canterbury for the next few years to be our major supplier down here for Tassie
awesome.
Representative rugby, which is awesome. Yeah, we've only just done it. And you know, it's something that's awesome for us to, you know, to have Canterbury on board and to be able to, you know, they got quality products and it's awesome having them with all their gear and everything, which is cool. And one of the things they had in that was, you know, they'll send two of our coaches up there, and I phoned the one coach and had a chat with him, and he was like, oh geez, I'd love to. That's amazing, you know, that's great. I phoned the other coach and had a chat with her, and she said, you know, her husband coaches down here and he's, you know, level 3, and she said, well, he wants to know why he's not going, you know. And I said, because it's your opportunity.
That's right.
It's your turn.
Yeah.
You've started coaching and you're learning, and now, you know, he's had those opportunities to go to those courses and go to those conferences and that kind of stuff. It's your turn now. It's your turn to learn and meet people and develop your game and learn new techniques and be involved. And, you know, I've done it, and it's great, and it's awesome, and I've learned a lot along the way, and I'm always learning. I'll never stop learning. I love learning. I love people telling me how to do things differently. I'll never say I know it all, because there's always stuff you can learn, and you watch and you absorb and you can see how to do things differently. And Donna, yeah, she was like, oh, that's, you know, this is amazing. Wow, this is really cool. And it is. It's a great opportunity to go up there for a few days, meet all these coaches, meet all these people, listen to all these talks, get out and do some practical stuff. And there's no doubt that the two of them will come back and they'll be better for it.
Yep, absolutely. Wow, guys, what a podcast. Sean, mate, thank you very much for jumping on.
It's thank you.
Absolute pleasure. It's great to see someone who is as nuts and as passionate about rugby as most of the other people in the country. And, you know, we really trust and really believe that, you know, with that passion and with that skill set that you have and the way you're so sociable around not only Tassie but around rugby in general. Mate, great things are coming down here for sure.
Thank you.
And, mate, look, you know, for you Buffheads in Rugby Australia, I'll pay a bit of attention, please. But, no, look, again, thank you very much for – I'm obviously come down here to Tassie, so thank you very much for having me, number one. And, mate, yeah, I'm just so glad I can get Tassie Rugby's perspective on all of this.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I think we really appreciate it. I mean, you know, when you got hold of me and said you wanted to come down, I thought, oh, geez, I wonder what this is all about. And I wasn't sure if there was sort of, you know, a bit of an angle on this or what. And then the more I got chatting and the more we sort of discussed things. And I was like, actually, this is a great opportunity just to sit down, have a chat, let people know what's happening down in Tassie,
yeah.
Let people know what's going on around Australia,
yep.
and see what rugby is all about and grow the game. And then at the end of the day, we all want the same thing for the game. Absolutely. We want it to grow. We want it to you know, blossom,
yep.
And we're working really hard down here to do whatever we can within our means, and I can see you doing the same, and it's really appreciable to see someone like yourself getting around and trying to grow the game as well. So thank you.
No, I appreciate that, mate. Thank you very much. And you know, that's one of these podcasts. I've sort of 2020 when I started, I said, you know what, mate, if everyone else isn't going to run the game, then bugger it, I'll do it myself. Yeah, the best thing about this podcast, I find like-minded people who just want to absolute and who are giving it their all every day, trying their absolute best. So, once again, Sean, thank you very much for jumping on a podcast. Anything Tassie Rugby's doing in the upcoming months or weeks that you want to promote or anything like that while we're here?
No, we got a little holiday camp coming up. So if you jump on our Facebook page, you can have a look there and see we've got a holiday club. Well, I suppose a bit of a holiday program for our juniors, trying to get that going. And then, you know, we get into our season. We'll have some sevens in term four and you know, just keep building towards our awesome. our big season of 2024. 91 years this year, which is awesome. And, yeah, we just want to keep growing the game and keep pushing it and do whatever we can.
Fantastic. Fantastic, mate. Well, again, thank you very much, mate.
Thank you for having me.
That's us, guys. Stay tuned to the social medias, _ The Rugby Journey. There's a Rugby Journey Facebook page. Hopefully in the near future we get the Rugby Journey YouTube page up and running too. That'll be very exciting. So stay tuned, guys. Much love. Peace.